Down to Business with Bobby Kerr on News Talk.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland.
Now, we talked about those business and some other stories. I'm delighted to be joined by Linda Daly. She's a business reporter with the Sunday Times, and Stephen O'Leary, who's the founder of Alitico. Welcome, one and all, and nice to see you all on this bright and hopefully sunny morning. Sun isn't quite here yet, but it'll be with us soon. Stephen, front page of the Irish Times, just one third of new homes actually go on sale. Some alarming stats in here.
There is, but there's also a lot of other kind of stories behind the headline, I think, here, which are worth digging into. So this is Killian Woods writing on the front page, as you say, of the Irish Times. And there are two key voices in this article. So the story is based on fresh research by estate agent Sherry Fitzgerald. And their head of research, Jean Behan, is quoted in the piece, along with Dr. Lorcan Sir, who's a senior lecturer in housing at TU Dublin. There is actually good news within this piece, and that's on the annual rate of home completions, which have almost doubled in the last 6 years. So the good news here is we are building far more homes today than we were 6 years ago. The bad news is it's nowhere near enough, and that's what's reflected in the research. The fact that really only one in three new homes that are being built are available for purchase to private buyers. And therein lies a big part of the problem.
And you could say, could you not, Linda, that there's probably further good news in this, in that in showing that state-backed housing charities, county councils, purchasing homes for social and affordable housing have grown to command close to half of all the sales over the period.
Yeah.
So, you know, while the availability of individual properties doesn't seem to be there for individual people, councils and housing charities buying up stock could be seen as positive.
Yeah, look, it's a double-edged sword, really. I mean, it depends where you're coming from. If you're a first-time buyer, if you're a buyer, you mightn't like these figures. On the face of it, 36,000 homes, only 12,000 are coming for individual buyers. But previously, it would have been a lot of funds were involved. They haven't been in the market in the last few years. And yes, it's AHBs. So, and we do need rental. We need rental homes, especially with immigrants coming in. Most of them workers. They're kind of temporary. They're not looking to buy. So we do need those rental homes. And
yeah,
the state has been the most active member of the market over the last 3 years.
I don't know how these stats are comparable with other European countries, Stephen, but home ownership in Ireland, it's declined from 70% in 2011 to 66% in 2022. That means less people able to buy a house.
It does, and I think we are going to come to some stories maybe later in the papers where we do have some of those European comparisons when it comes to how people maybe feel about the future, and I think home ownership is centrally tied to that. It would also be really interesting to know a little bit more about the breakdown of that 50% that gets talked about in this piece of the other buyers, right? So you talked about
who are local
government. Yeah, yeah, especially, I suppose, at a county council level, like where is that split across the country? But also they do talk about investment funds. And I think sometimes the fear here can be that there are these big investment funds buying up all of the property. It'd be really good to get behind these numbers and know just what that split looks like. Because like you said, I think there's a lot of support for governments, charitable organisations buying up houses to make them affordable to some. But there are maybe concerns when it comes to institutional investors.
Now, there might be more good news here if you're a saver and if you have a Revolut account, Linda, because Revolut's move to hike interest on saving accounts prompts hopes that others will follow. I think this is really good news for a consumer.
Yeah, well, look, it's a good story for Revolut anyway. So they've jumped on the back of the ECB increasing its interest rates this week. Irish people are savers. €1 in every €8 being saved, but we're not getting the benefit of the interest rates. You know, often when the ECB raises its interest rates, the focus is on.
Yeah.
The mortgage payers. It's increasing, but it's not by much. I mean, it's something like 2.5% of an interest rate. And I suppose this kind of low level of interest has kind of, you know, driven savers to invest in unregulated products in recent years, and many of them have been burnt because of that. You know, the likes of Blackbee Savers, Thousands in Arena Capital, they've all lost the bulk of their savings. So it would be good to see the banks increase.
Well, it also, and I'm going to be talking to Jim Power, economist, about this a bit later on in the show, but I'm going to be asking him about, like, every time interest rates go up, banks make more profit. And I don't think Revolut have the access to the central European funds that the pillar banks have, so they don't get as good a an interest rate. So they will put it up to the other banks and force them to maybe give better deposit rates.
Well, this is why competition in the sector is so important. And, you know, Weston does refer to this. He, you know, he talks to Dara Cassidy from bonkers.ie, and definitely there's a whole range of different saving options that are set out here. And the fintechs have brought a lot of that into the market, right? So they've brought competition, they've brought a greater focus, but it also probably raises the question of how soon is this new state investment scheme going to come along? Because the point is made in this, that if you're paying a high rate of dirt on your savings, that really, whether it's 2.5% or 3%,
you're not even keeping up with inflation.
Exactly that. Yeah. And so it really does mean that you know, there's been a lot of talk about this government investment scheme that's going to come on stream. I think it needs to come sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Now, I was trying to stay positive, but this next piece is a little bit of a dampener. Why Irish fear their children will have a lower standard of living than they do. It's a piece by Sean McCarthy in the Irish Mail. Linda, we seem to be down there with Finland and Greece and Latvia around our economic forecasting here, and it's for a country that's taken in so much revenue and so much foreign direct investment related income, we really, our outlook looks really pessimistic.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of, you wonder how much of it is based on reality, to be honest. Look, 35% of Irish people said that their economic situation was bad. 17% of those said it was very bad. There's 40% found it difficult to afford everyday living expenses. 41% said they thought it would get worse. So, I mean, basically around 4 in 10 people really think that their situation is bad. Look, I'm not going to take away from what those people feel. But at the same time, you know, I was thinking about this recently. I said this before on the show, I was raised in Crumlin, and, you know, we were poor, right? We were really poor. We were so poor that when I went to work, I told somebody how we used to put cardboard in our shoes, right? I was one of six kids, and they looked at me like that wasn't the norm, right? But I didn't know I was poor because I didn't have social media.
Yeah.
And you're raised and you're living the best life that you have. But I do think that social media has made people look, and they're looking at the lives that the celebrities have, and they think my situation is bad.
Yeah. On the back of that. No, I totally agree with you. And it's interesting as well, Stephen, is it not? This is a survey of 26,000 people across all 27 EU member states. But if you ask somebody something in a negative way, you get a negative answer.
Yeah, I think this is a classic case of needing to be very careful of a single source of data and an opinion-based question. And I think there are other things, you know, if you contrast this with the piece of research from Sherry Fitzgerald in the top story, that's based on actual sales data. You know, when we look at things like, you know, on the flip side, you take, you know, the utility companies, and when they talk about the number of customers who are in arrears, there are hard things you can point to that are illustrative of some of the challenges that people in Ireland face today. We talked about housing a little bit earlier. But then there are loads of other research points that come out about talking about how great a place Ireland is to live. And we hear this consistently. So it's interesting research, but it does need to be taken in context.
Okay, well, we'll try and keep things positive. If you're an investor in SpaceX, Linda, you might be looking at today with a relative positive outlook. Musk becomes the world's first trillionaire as SpaceX shares soar on their market debut. Really eye-watering figures here.
But is he happy, Bobby?
I'd say not.
Look, the SpaceX has IPO'd. It started, look, I often wonder, I mean, obviously, like a lot of the traders, these are the same people who listen to Donald Trump on a Friday about how the war is going to end. And then on a Monday, you know, the oil prices skyrocket. So Look, it started well, $150. It went up to $168 at the height of yesterday, but was back down to $160.
Valuing the business at $2.2 trillion.
Trillion, yeah. So he, and then his share of that is $924 billion.
My God. Yeah.
But there are questions around SpaceX and its management, and you wonder, are those people buying high, and will the price go down in the future months? And it probably will.
Stephen, what's your take on this? As I say, the numbers are pretty eye-watering. A lot of commentary saying that this is a bet on Musk rather than any of his businesses. But and again, that the various businesses that he's involved in, we saw what he did to Twitter, for instance. So really, this is high-stakes stuff here.
It is, and like, it's not that long ago that we were talking about Tesla on the show and the near boycott that was happening of the brand, certainly at a European level and certainly at some parts of America. So it does show how quickly the news cycle can change. Like, we're 6 months out less from midterms in the US. We know how contentious they're going to be. We know how central Musk was to the previous set of elections we had in the US. So I think if you're betting on Musk, then this comes with high risk. There is another really interesting point made in the Times today, and it's about the fact that this is a big IPO, but there are others on the horizon, right? So they reference the fact that OpenAI, Anthropic, Meta and Google owner Alphabet are reported to be looking at new fundraising. If all of those things happen, they make the point that money that they want to raise, that's going to have to come from somewhere. And some of it may come from people who have invested in this IPO. So, you know, the first 24 hours, super exciting.
Yeah.
But very much watch this.
There's a good quote from Musk here.
Yeah, I was going to read it out. You read it out. Yeah, absolutely.
If people had told me this was going to happen, I was like, man, you must be smoking some really good crack. So there you go.
Because I think this company is going to fail.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what we're dealing with here. But as I say, the numbers are absolutely staggering. Big day for Ireland-Canada relations. Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney arriving this morning, Stephen. I had the pleasure of meeting him about 2 weeks ago in Ottawa. He is one impressive individual.
Yeah, and that is very much reflected in the editorial or the opinion piece in the Irish Times today, which I would describe as gushing, right? So the headline on it is the Carney Doctrine, and it just talks to the impact he has had in his relatively short political career to date, right? That he was one of the few politicians to call out this new world order earlier this year, to talk about the fact that the big superpowers are going to look after the big superpowers, and those who are not in that space need to come together and collaborate. And I think his visit today is reflective of that, right? So it ties in with some other big job announcements we've seen from Canadian companies in the last 24, 48 hours. Also staggering to see the increase in Canadian investment in the last 10 years in Ireland, up 131%.
Yeah.
So clearly there's a really strong connection between the two countries. So the fact that he's visiting for 24 hours and the age-old, his Irish ties, right? I mean, we lean into this so much and we laugh about it and it is kind of lighthearted. But it's also critically important because it means people are coming to the country not just for business reasons, but to strengthen those roots. And I think it's only a good thing.
Linda, his Mayo connections, I think 3 out of his 4 grandparents were Irish. He hasn't been here. And because he really has been such a kind of visionary for Canada, very impressive on the world stage. As Stephen said, a fellow who already had a really good reputation and career before he ever came into politics. And here we are throwing our arms around him and we're dead right.
And look, they're legitimate because his grandparents were, but he also had Irish citizenship that he just had to renounce when he became the Prime Minister of Canada. Prime Minister, he is Prime Minister, isn't he? He's not President.
Yeah, Prime Minister. Yeah, Canadian Prime Minister, yeah.
Yeah, look, he seems to have, like, he hasn't done anything wrong. He's so popular in Canada between that Davos speech. And he was seen wearing the Heated Rivalry fleece and had his leg wrapped around one of its actors, you know. So he's really popular on all levels, I think.
All right. Well, he's very welcome and I'm looking forward to seeing how his visit goes. I think it'll be good. And as you said, Stephen, there, the economic ties now with Ireland and Canada are very, very important. And it's great to have an ally such as Carney. We'll walk through the cost of the staycation. Again, it has fallen in many tourism hotspots, but availability appears low, which seems, when you read that headline, you say, well, costs coming down if availability is low. That doesn't seem to roll off the tongue.
Well, it doesn't, but I think, and this is a really good piece, there's multiple contributors to it in the Irish Independent today, and it does point to a change in behaviour amongst those who are looking for staycations in Ireland, and it's a much more last-minute booking approach that seems to be coming through.
Yeah.
And that seems to be fueled by a level of uncertainty. So throughout the article, you hear people talking about the fact that they, you know, especially I think you take events in the Middle East, people are unsure about how much it's going to cost to live in Ireland this year. How much is it going to cost to fuel my car to travel across the country? How much are my energy costs going to look like? So I think that uncertainty means that the budgeting for a holiday or a staycation or that confidence to spend money earlier isn't there. So you are seeing this kind of unusual thing where, despite the fact that availability isn't as high as it has been, prices are also a little bit lower. And I think the key takeout for consumers here is shop around,
yeah,
right? So there are some very expensive listings that are quoted in the article, but there's some very affordable ones too. So it does show that there's value out there for those who want a staycation.
Yeah. Data reveals that South Dublin, Louth and Wicklow are the most expensive places to stay. Wexford, Limerick and East Galway are the cheapest.
That's where you
I'm off
go,
to East Galway.
Yeah. Wexford, sunny.
All right, Linda, the city of Los Angeles, if you want a leisurely read today in the Irish Times, Los Angeles, the city created by an Irish vagabond visionary, licks its wounds in 2026. It talks about how L.A., came about, the importance of the movie industry, but how it's changed and how the city, the vibe in the city and lots of other things have changed. You know, as I say, as a long read, it's just something that is worth checking out today.
Yeah, this piece by Keith Duggan, you know, it's really a contrasting piece because it starts off talking about the glitter of Hollywood and the Toy Story premiere, and then goes on to talk about the homelessness. There's 80,000 people that are homeless in LA. But I suppose it has pinned a lot of its economy on this Hollywood film industry. But in recent years, like when those fires happened last year, there was just one film being made in Hollywood at the time.
Yeah.
So the industry wasn't affected. But it seems to be turning around. Karen Bass, who's just recently won that election against Spencer Pratt, she is kind of focusing on the Hollywood industry, and the number of films that are being made has increased in the last few months. The most successful films this year, Obsession and Backrooms. That Obsession film is huge.
Yeah, yeah.
Like 780. Oh, it's made like millions, hundreds of millions. But yeah, so it's a lot of focus now on Hollywood, and maybe if they can kind of reintroduce that to the sector, that maybe it'll affect homelessness.
Last word to you on this, Stephen. Did you get a chance to read the article?
Yeah, I did. I mean, like, I would encourage everyone to pick up a paper today and buy this and read Duggan's work. I think the standout piece for me, and, you know, I always like learning things I didn't know, was this role of William Mulholland. So Belfast born, Dublin raised, a self-taught engineer who ended up in charge of the LA water treatment. I mean, it's an amazing insight into just his role. And again, a reflection of the role the Irish have played in the US over the centuries.
All right, folks, thanks for coming in. A great review of the business stories and some others, as always, by Linda Daly, business reporter with the Sunday Times, and Stephen O'Leary, founder of Alitigo. Enjoy the weather, folks. Enjoy your weekend.
Down to business with Bobby Kerr. Sponsored by Bank of Ireland. Saturday morning at 8. News Talk. Conversation that counts.